I'll do that.
Okay, that's it.
Yeah, done it. Okay.
Okay, good afternoon, comrades. Welcome to our regular discussion group hosted by the Consistent Democrats. Today we're doing a presentation on ecocide. Susan, has a presentation for us, and then after the presentation, Diana will host a question and answer session. But I will bring people in to speak when they indicate. I remind comrades that we are being recorded, so please try to keep the contributions to one at a time and not interrupt each other. Okay, Susan, take it away. The floor is yours.
Thank you. Okay, so ecocide is a word that has been coined since the 1970s, and although that's more than 50 years now, most people have various ideas about what it is, what constitutes ecocide, and where it stands internationally. So I've said, as part of my introduction, it's still to be added as the fifth international core crime. So at present, there are four international core crimes out of the dozen or so recognized, and they are genocide, crimes against humanity, war crimes, and crimes of aggression. They mostly stem out of the Nuremberg trials, where crimes of aggression are where you take a peaceful country and attack it. Genocide, where you attempt to kill or otherwise harm an entire population based on ethnic or other descriptions. Crimes against humanity, mostly things like torture, rape, murder that can happen in both peace and wartime, and war crimes, which are the deliberate, shall we say, carrying out of war in excessive amounts of either civilian deaths or a determination to degrade the population and it's in, so badly that it will not recover. So, ecocide was first coined by Arthur Goulston, who was a scientist working at, I think, Harvard. During the post-war period, he had served in the American army, but he was mostly a scientist, famous for demonstrating that the phototrophic response, that is, of plants to light, was driven by riboflavins rather than carotene as had been thought previously. But he described it as an attack not just on humanity, but also the environment itself during the imperialist wars against liberation post-World War II. It was popularized by Olof Palme in the 1972 Helsinki conferences. And there have been individual laws passed in many nations, but it is not recognized globally, not at the UN, not at the ICC. And it appears to me to be that there are vested interests in the reasons as to why that is not recognized, which hopefully you'll understand as I go on. So it's defined as the unlawful or wanton acts committed by the with substantial knowledge of a likelihood of severe and either widespread or long-term damage to the environment. Between 1948 and 1960, trioxone was sprayed by the British military planes with the help of Australia, New Zealand and other British Empire troops in Malaya. It wasn't described as a war. It was described as the Malayan emergency. 12 years of war. But for the people who were suffering it, it was the anti-British National Liberation War. And it was basically the troops who had been, shall we say, promised there by fighting on the side of the British Empire that they would liberate their country from the occupation of the Japanese army during World War II. But instead they found themselves relegated to basically using their resources, particularly rubber and tin, to pay off the debts to America for the Marshall Plan for the British imperialism. And as a consequence, it would be fair to say that they cut wages, expected more work, took away particularly human rights, and above all, stamped on the Chinese communist efforts to liberate the country from British imperialism. Now, the settler colonialists, who were mainly the main biggest landowners, killed left-wing activists who retaliated by setting fire to plantations. And it was not called a war because insurance firms don't pay out in the civil wars. Thanks to strict military secrecy and establishment control of the media, the only newspaper to report on these crimes was the Daily Worker, later to become the Morning Star. Now, the picture you can see is called Bloodstains, Malaya Prophets, and it was ex-army troops who had been in Malaya demonstrating at the Dunlop shareholders meeting of 1952. The article was cited, Headhunters in Malayan Emergency, The Atrocity and Cover-Up. You can see it in Wiki. But basically, the crimes committed by British troops and others included beheading and scalping of both Chinese and indigenous civilians, torture of POWs and civilians, the scorched earth policy, which was carried out from 1948 to 1950, involved the destruction of crops and livestock and was deliberately intended to starve the people out who they regarded as supporting the activists. So it affected civilians in particular. And it also, after Briggs took over in 51, the relocation of over a million of the population to concentration camps, which were excused as new villages. So we're not talking about a small atrocity. We are talking about systematic atrocities. But one of the things that they did was to use defoliants on the crops that were being grown by the indigenous and other populations. The media suppression was so successful that most people, including me, I'd never even heard of this crime. It was, it involved many, certainly about 10,000 communist activists, but certainly at least three or four times that many civilians. And as you can see, relocation of a million people in the population of Malaya was horrendous. It was put down both with the atrocities, but also because the majority of people, there was a racial component, shall we say, to the fact that the Chinese workers who had were not indigenous had been treated as second and third class citizens, and the ruling class were very much supported by the Malayan citizens. So it was a country already divided. However, it was regarded as so successful, or at least the military sold it as that Kennedy adopted it, and it is now much better known for the Vietnam War. So they continued the carpet bombing that was so popular by people like Bomber Harris and others in World War II. But they also used herbicides, especially Agent Orange, which was a slightly milder, you might be surprised to hear, version of the trioxone that had been used in Malaya by the British. But they also used napalm and other prescribed weapons. Which led to mass birth defects and ecocide, which is where it had been coined its name. 20% of the jungle, the third of the mangrove forests were defoliated. Atrocities again included mass executions, rape, murder, torture, relocation, and ethnic cleansing. While the US may not have been the first to commit this ecocide, they certainly used this proxy war to deliberately and wantonly commit it in the pursuit of the support of capitalism and the suppression of communism post-World War II. It facilitating the looting of resources in the Third World by fomenting and supporting or reimposing colonial rule across Indochina to prevent the advance of communism at the expense of the wishes of the indigenous people for liberation. And it was justified by both McCarthyism and religious and corporate interests. Which is where, of course, it gets most of its recognition as a war crime. Now, in a sort of paradoxical way, that has actually caused major problems. It means that the West, when it carries out wars, chooses not to call them wars. It uses NATO as a means of both furthering proxy wars and wars of aggression. When fifth column infiltration and supporting terrorism, things like Operation Gladio to destabilize socialist governments in the West, failed to bring about the major changes. Although you can see with current systems that seems to be working quite well. Anyway, over the last five decades, ecocide, as it is seen by people, have changed. The popular, if you like, image of it as Agent Orange and herbicides and bulldozers of people to effectively remove them has now been, shall we say, watered down by things like it's no longer seen as genocide, it's seen as ethnic cleansing, where the complaint is, well, they just didn't move away from the land that we wanted or the resources we wished to take. So therefore, it's not really genocide, it's just ethnic cleansing. We want to leave it with just the people. Over the last 10 to 20 years, it's now been expanded by people who've been frustrated by its failure to be adopted as the fifth core crime, to include capitalist land grabs, attacking indigenous people around the world. However, you'll notice it doesn't include one of the biggest land grabbers at the moment, who is busy attacking a number of countries in the Middle East. It also includes systematic poisoning of the environment. That includes toxic chemicals, spills of extracted oil, environmental damage through negligence, and deliberate vandalism by corporations. it's necessary to continue the pretense that it's not a real war, because they deny any long-term accountability for such acts of wanton destruction. And it's always justified by their relentless pursuit of profit for shareholders, even when those shareholders are often delineated into, shall we say, I forget what the term is now, but it's there are different varieties of shareholders depending on how much profit they get. And so there appears to be the development of a fundamental flaw. And the flaw that I'm going to talk about is this one. If you wish to, the global push to include ecocide, I'm sorry, the writing's a bit small, in the International Criminal Court has gained momentum, but the law of ecocide fails to address its relationship with the international investment and arbitration, which is the IILA. This sustains global capitalism, and this in turn drives ecocide deliberately. By focusing on the criminalization of it, the proposed law risks overlooking the legal corporate practices that cause the most devastating environmental harm. And these practices thrive in what David White called regimes of permission, which enable ecocidal activities and perpetuate neo-colonial power structures. In particular, shall we say, the pretense of the Commonwealth as opposed to the British Empire, France with its Francafrique, the corporations, and America, obviously, with its own empire. The legal mechanisms, like the lack of global standards for pollution and the North-South investment treaties, threaten to sustain the environmental destruction by protecting the biggest corporations despite being the major culprits, and the indigenous peoples of the global South being the worst affected. Ultimately, any law of ecocide as currently envisaged will fail to address the IILA's role in driving ecocide, leaving the most harmful industries and practices to go unchallenged. It will continue to wreak havoc and will continue to rely on the control of the Western media to point the finger elsewhere. I can point at things like the obfuscation of greenwashing of carbon. Now, my head's really going. I hate doing presentations. But selling carbon so that first world countries can continue to pollute. Now, what I have got is a small, which I'm going to welcome anyone who recognizes any of these pictures and can tell me a bit about them. If not, I will tell you. So at the top, we have this picture. Any ideas from anyone? You're welcome to unmute, by the way. Who can tell me what that is? No, I'm sorry if the pictures are a bit small. It's actually a Nigerian Delta oil spill. Since 1958, upwards of 100 million barrels of oil have been spilt in the Niger Delta. Only 6% of it on land. So despite the fact that they always point to those dreadful locals who are stealing oil, in actual fact, thanks to Royal Dutch Shell and ExxonMobil and others, the reality is that this is old, small pipelines which are joined together so that it doesn't require as much supervision and protection, and poor maintenance, linkage of small wells, what are called spills, and bunkering and corruption lead to little or no regulation. So that we now have the situation where one of the most biodiverse regions of the world is now actually one of the most polluted, and it will take a minimum of 30 to 40 years to clean it up enough so that people can live there without risking birth defects and ill health. Any ideas as to the bottom picture here? Hopefully you can see where I've highlighted it a little bit. They might trigger a few memories. No, you're all very quiet.
Bhopal.
Yes, it is 1984 and Bhopal. I picked the biggest ones. This is the exterior view of the Union Carbide pesticide factory in Bhopal, India, one of the worst industrial disasters, and it was in 1985. It was the factory before it was stripped of some of its most valuable components and abandoned to the elements. What's really shocking is it's still not paid damages in 40 years. There are thousands, tens of thousands of tons of toxic waste, including phosgene, the MIC, the carbyle that was used. The toxic chemicals leach into the local groundwater and aquifers, which are the primary water supply for thousands of people, which is the reason why there are, again, massive birth defects and really terrible health problems and cancer. Right, the top corner one, that's this one. Anyone recognise that? Max, might you know, recognise it?
It's very small. I don't know, maybe the Alaska spill.
I would have said Gulf of Mexico, isn't it? The
Deep Horizon.
Yeah, Deepwater Horizon, that's that one, which happened soon after one of the worst oil spills in Niger, but got a far more coverage, shall we say. But the shocking thing to me is that 10 years later, they've still not actually properly capped the oil wells, so it's still leaking oil into the Gulf. It's still uncapped, and this is since 2010, which I find even more shocking, the fact that they're still burning it off and it's still leaking oil from the actual oil wells. It's never actually been properly capped off. Anyone any ideas what this last one in the bottom corner is? Diana?
Of course.
It certainly is. Any idea which one?
No, I mean, the one I know about is the one in Aberdeen, on the Aberdeenshire coast, which is one of Trump's, and destroyed a site of special scientific interest.
Yep. Well, this one is actually St Andrews. It's the oldest golf course in the world because it goes back to the, I think, 1400s. As you can see, the green desert that they complain about. There are over 38,000 golf courses around the world. They create, if you like, a monoculture of pesticides, grass, and in many cases, because it is such a, shall we say, Epstein class, in the majority, money that goes into maintaining these, the fact that there are 38,000, the most are in America, second most are in UK, and they mop up huge amounts of water, and because of the sheer wealth of the billionaire class and their entertainment, they do go around the world and they are placed in some of the worst areas for using up the water. I think there's one near Cairo. It must be incredibly, and there are others in Israel, that it must be incredibly galling for the poorer population to have to see all this water being spent on golf and not on them. But welcome to the real world. Anyway, the questions that I've got for opened up for discussion are the fact that we are looking at a much bigger and more problematic thing. We tend to think of ecocide as the wanton destruction, shall we say, part of it. The corporations who are negligent, they claim the unforeseeable, we didn't realise it was going to happen, or we would clear it up, but it's just too expensive, or nobody can do anything about it. What we are looking at in the future, and this is what really worries me for the global, for ecocide, is the deliberate and, shall we say, financial interests that globalization, that the mass, the multinational corporations, the billionaires who have access to huge amounts of money, and the corruption of local politics is going to have in the future. So I've mentioned a few. AI data centers are, you know, Trump gave them $500 billion to develop. Less than 2% have actually been built, although they're insisting that they're massively overselling AI. There are two big problems as far as I can see. One is ultra low sound, that is sound below the 20 hertz ability of us to hear. But it turns out that these data centers produce huge amounts of ultrasound, which creates anxiety, health problems, hearing problems for people who are susceptible to it, as well as using huge amounts of water and energy resources. And thanks to corruption, they usually get tax breaks for it as well. PFAS, that's the forever chemicals. Dear old Teflon Tony, I hadn't realised it had quite such a big role in encouraging people to use them, but famously they tend to result in even the production of them results in benzene and other chemicals being released into the water and the water table. But they are found in every part of the world. I might add the microplastics are doing the same thing. Monoculture, that's the agribusiness, junk food, and the addictive properties of various things. War, the military-industrial machine. People don't tend to think of how much war and the aggressive wars, shall we say, of NATO and other blocs simply rely on and do as much damage as possible. Enforced obsolescence is another one. This single-use plastics waste, the recycling dishonesty, but also we're seeing a lot at the moment with Windows 11 and the fight by Microsoft. So things like you can't own your programs, your DVDs, your even books nowadays. Everything is supposed to be licensed. It'll be, you know, your Kindle, when you buy a Kindle and load it up with books, its use dies with you. It's not like you can hand on books to your children or your grandchildren or libraries or share them with hospitals. It's gone. They're reducing the amount of ownership, financialization that results in inequality. Particularly, I would point to things like mortgages where the government is busy supporting buy-to-let, that is to say the landlord class, certainly as much, if not more, than they are home ownership for ordinary working people. And industrialization, which has always been, if you like, part of the genocide industry, or ecocide industry, has increasingly resulted in the encouragement in some areas of foreign ownership of land, and the multinationals are particularly fond of moving into that. The other thing about industrialization is de-skilling, outsourcing, smart cities. All of these things are going to result in more and more people being squashed into smaller and smaller amounts of land, and justifying taxing us for being where we are, whether it is public transport, smart cities, and particularly ULEZ. I was shocked to see that if I went and stayed with my daughter in London, it would cost me as much for the 4 days of actually having a car in London as it would the petrol to get there and come back. Finally, I'd like to have a think about advertising, information access, privacy, data collection. Again, that's linked back to the AI data centres, but also the constant adverts pushing gaming and gambling, the privacy and data and what you are doing. And finally, of course, there's Big Pharma with their efforts for permanent medication. Iatrogenic, if you haven't come across it, is the damage that is done to your body by long-term and overuse of medications, and polypharmacy is the damage done by the interaction between multiple different medications and the fact that you end up taking one medication to stop the side effects of another medication. Addiction and the profiteering that comes from everything from overuse of medication to vaccinations. I'm not an anti-vaxxer in terms of vaccination per se, but vaccination as a cure-all for everything, which may or may not be necessary. I'm told, and I will have to check it up, that in some cases there are anything up to a five-year-old nowadays may have as many as 50 vaccinations, which cannot be good for their young immune system. Anyway, I'll leave the topics on board and we'll open up the discussion for Q&A.
Okay, thanks, Eden. That was a very good talk.
That's kind of you. Thank you.
Diana is going to do the question and answer. For those that you would like to speak, for those of you on camera, you can just use your real hand because I can see you. For those of you who are not on camera, please use your virtual hand. Okay, Diana, take it away.
Susan's presentation was excellent, covers a lot of stuff that I didn't know about. I think I just have to wait for people to ask some questions. I did make some notes, myself. The Nigerian oil spills, I can't remember the names of the people and the tribes, but there were some Nigerian activists, trying to get the company. I'm not sure what company it was. It might have been Shell. It might have been a number of them, trying to get them prosecuted or trying to get compensation. And the guys who were doing that got murdered for their efforts.
Yes, I think that's the Royal Dutch, the Royal Dutch Shell Company were forced to pay about, I think it was 800 million for two very massive pollution cases. But as you say, the revenge, shall we say, was distinctly unpleasant. And they continue to, you know, that's two. If I tell you that there are about, I think it's nearly 2,000 oil spills in the Nile, in the Niger Delta a year and have been since the 1950s. That will tell you how bad the situation is. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay, Diana, Mac put in the chat. Please repeat what they were doing that got them killed. I think he means the protesters. So can you say something about that?
I'm afraid the sad truth is a lot of the corporations employ very heavy-handed mercenaries, pay the police, and in some cases the army to just kill off anyone that they see as being a nuisance, which is really how the number of civilian casualties, shall we say, in the malaria emergency was portrayed. But it continues everywhere. You know, there is a reason why protesters and activists are murdered, and it's not just Israel killing journalists and other people. It's anyone who stands in the way of corporate profits. Yeah, you know, and it included, and it wasn't Diana Fossey murdered for her attempts to protect gorillas. Yeah. And I was quite relieved. Jane Goodall was never harmed for her work on trying to preserve chimpanzees and other primates. Yeah. It's a dangerous business being any sort of scientist or activist of any sort, you know, political journalist, whatever, in this day of, in this current day. You know, this is a war. Yeah.
Yeah, and people in that position are prone to very unfortunate, mysterious, fatal accidents.
You are quite right. And it is certainly not just a conspiracy theory.
Would anyone, Ian, you'd like to add the question?
Just a couple of things. Can you hear me, yeah?
Yes.
Just a couple of things. I mean, a lot of this stuff is stuff that I was vaguely aware of, but obviously the magnitude of it is something else. And I mean, with the question of climate change is obviously a key element of this as well. And you raise stuff about data centers and the enormous, it's not just things like low spectrum noise and things like that. There's also the huge amount of energy that these things, you know, that these things actually use up. And of course, we're using them now, actually, even for this call. We're using some of this stuff now. It's exponential in terms of its potential for generating greenhouse emissions and related things and using up non-renewable energy. I mean, it's there is a possibility that at some point it can be harnessed with renewable energy, but even so, it's incredibly energy consuming, and in some ways it makes you wonder whether some of the things that we're doing with robotics and with AI, etc., are actually worth the effort. I think they probably, you know, I think in a socialist society, we may well, obviously we want to make use of these means of communication and things like that, you know, but on the other hand, you know, it does have the effect of not only putting enormous strain on energy resources, but also isolating people even more from each other socially. You know, it's got a complex, effects, I think, you know, apart from its environmental consequences. The other thing is about warfare. You know, I mean, obviously you mentioned Agent Orange as the classic case of ecocide, and but warfare today is incredibly you know, destructive in terms of the use of both of energy resources and, the deliberate pollution of environments. I mean, obviously things like depleted uranium, and the use of chemical weapons and all kinds of, dirty bombs the destruction of the Russian pipelines and things like this, you know, the incredible amount of emissions that were caused by that destruction a few years ago. You know, I mean, it's incredibly capitalism is incredibly destructive. And it's accelerating, there's no doubt about it, you know. And we've been hearing warnings for years about the imminent nature of environmental collapse, which in some cases has proved to be slightly foreshortened. But I think the danger is still there. You know, the danger is in some ways accelerating, but it's doing so in a more complex and not so easily predictable manner. But it certainly is there. You know, capitalism will be the grave digger of human civilization if we don't actually overthrow it and get rid of the profit. Yeah, Nord Stream. That's the name I was thinking of. If we don't remove the motive of profit from the economic organization of humanity. And if you don't get rid of what you call the Epstein class, which is in fact the super billionaire class, which has taken control partly as a result of neoliberalism and partly was the driving force of it. You know, the self-enrichment of a parasitic, not even an industrial bourgeoisie, but a parasitic financial bourgeoisie, is accelerating society towards barbarism. And that's a particular stage of the latest manifestations of capitalism. And, you know, you can see that that Marxist socialism and barbarism, it's actually Rosa Luxemburg who coined the phrase, but the message is there in Marx that either you overthrow the existing society or all classes will be ruined by the collapse of the system, you know. So that's where we're looking into, really. I'll leave it there. Thank you.
I do agree with you. I think the dissociation between the 4,000 or so billionaires in the world and their separation from normal living. They do not live normally anymore. It doesn't matter whether it's individuals who live to over 100 because they've had, you know, 10 heart transplants, to people who have, you know, which is something which is way beyond the financial law. But it's the transhumanism. It's the concentration of such vast amounts of wealth in individuals who have their own particular crusades, whether they're moral, religious, or political, which really push this whole system. And they have no comprehension of ordinary people's lives. And they, as a consequence, they treat other people, normal people, with such callous disregard. We are just collateral damage in a system which is designed to exploit us. And if they can't be exploited, they will kill them. You know, this is what is happening to people, indigenous people, but just, or, you know, complete countries being overthrown and destroyed. You can't look at Syria and say to yourself that being run by a country being run by terrorists, groomed by MI6 and CIA, funded by other people to murder and slaughter, and as they see it, ethnically cleanse the population, is in any way some sort of democratic improvement of humanity. It's just about the demonization of what was a popular leader into somebody who is then demonized so much that even now you will have people who say, oh, but, you know, at least we got rid of Assad. You're just going, and how was that a good thing? Well, because people in foreign countries decided that that was what ought to be done. You know, anyway, sorry, Diana, you've, I'm sure got to keep going. You need to unmute there.
So some of the things you said raise more points as well. But I was going back to the AI thing and the environmental impacts like that. I hadn't realised about the low frequency noise, but there's also serious problems with masses of water using for calling the servers, and this is something that this hasn't started with the big recent push for AI either, because the servers aren't just used for the AI, although that's made the problem exponentially worse. But also, there's been a problem with large amounts of cloud storage, just storage without the processing. That's been a problem for probably somewhere between 1 and 3 decades. There's a problem. Our wonderful, don't know what you should call the chunk of wood that acts as a prime minister, is pushing for or supporting corporations having AI and servers installed somewhere in the southeast, somewhere in East Anglia, in part of the driest part of the country, where there's a problem with having enough water for domestic use and for agriculture. But Starmer's pushing to have AI servers there, so that will cause water problems there. There's a lot of there's disputes in Ohio. Corporations have taken over Ohio to make Ohio, the state of Ohio, a big large implementation of AI. So that means that'll be using water, but also installing nuclear energy, large nuclear energy plants, and it will just totally devastating the state, and people are not happy. People in Ohio are not happy.
I'm a big fan of statistics. I find the fact that all of these data centers are being put in, as you say, areas where there is already a low water table, where there is already shortages of water. The fact that these are routinely being put in areas with not enough water that will stress the locals, that there is corruption. Lex Wexner is the guy, I believe, in Ohio.
Yeah,
who owns Albany, and he basically bought the governor, you know, the entire federal state, in the same way that Soros has just bought Hungary. It is about the billionaire class being able to completely, you know, to buy what they can't persuade people to do. And this is going to affect ordinary people, because they're the ones paying taxes to maintain it. On top of that, these appear to be putting data centers in areas where the energy is cheap. They can use solar power because they tend to be places which are hot, but it's the cooling that actually uses up the energy to actually keep these places cold, and the water. But on top of that, there is every reason, because of the low ultrasound, the ultra low sound, that it will also have a detrimental effect on people. We're going to have deserts, if you like, where there will be no animal life, because there, most animals can actually hear what we can't. But it will damage their health. They will, you know, it will become a desert in more ways than one. And I feel like it doesn't matter whether it's accidental, because these are vulnerable people who will be persuaded to sell their land, or will be subject, you know, easy to corrupt, or whether this is being done as a coordinated effort to render large parts of the world incapable of supporting life. You know, there's more than one way to commit ecocide. Yeah. I mean, when Ukraine cut the water off Crimea, when it was, when they voted to join the Russian Federation in 2014, that ended up with that, you know, within 10 years, there was a serious problem with the actual, you know, that agricultural land, which was some of the most productive in Ukraine, from being rendered completely incapable of actually supporting any form of agriculture. Yeah, you know, there are lots of ways of destroying it. Anyway, I'll give way to you, Paul, to...
Yeah, I want to sort of make a comment, but sort of turn it into question. Yeah, one of the things that got me is it's about the petty bourgeois environmental parties across the world, where they're trying to sort of square a circle, but on the one hand, they're supposedly pro-environment, but on the other hand, supporting both wars at the same time. I realise I'm talking to the converted here, but I just wondered if one of you two could say something about that.
Diana, do you want to go first? Because your hand's still up.
Oh. No, I'll take my hand down.
If not, I would say a classic example is the, look, we have a global recession facing us because of the attack on Iran and the Straits of Hormuz and the control of it. It's being sold as a, oh, these wicked Iranians are trying to blackmail us from using it. And you're just going, you've put this country under sanctions for the last 47 years. They are simply using the fact of their geography to free themselves from the sanctions, the harm that's been done, the damage, and the perpetual threat of invasion, carpet bombing, and just general destabilization of their society by a foreign country backed by, you know, the US or the Empire of the West, if you want to call it. You know, these are the deliberate manipulation of that is driven by Trump's greed, because he is using his tweets to manipulate the stock exchange and make himself personally very rich, having bled the country, you know, his supporters dry with his Bitcoin and various other scams, on top of the fact that, you know, the Greater Israel Project is designed to control all of the flow of oil and goods through the Mediterranean and control all of the oil and gas and so on coming through from, it would have been Azerbaijan through to Israel and then on to Europe. You know, this is about global control, and keep threatening war, which is what they were doing for the last 20 years, is both cultural genocide. They routinely destroy archaeological sites and the history and culture and civilization of the people around them, as well as, you know, committing absolutely vile atrocities, ethnic cleansing and genocide, which is a war crime, but use the Holocaust industry and their media control to whitewash it, so that it's always about finger pointing towards terrorism instead of admitting that actually the West is the terrorism state. Yeah. So it's not confused once you start to see that there is a plan. It's a plan by different people, which benefits different people, different groups of people at different times. But at the end of the day, I put it down as it's a war on the poor. It's a war on the 99% or 93% of people who will never see any benefit whatsoever from any of the happenings of the last century. Not, you know, the bankers' wars since World War I have been increasingly not about progress for humanity, but about the increasing inequality between the top 1% and the bottom 90%. And while they can say, you know, oh, we've got computers, we've got internet, we've got this, that, and the other, the truth is we have worse food, worse health, and we are increasingly, you know, we are being dumbed down. I'm shocked sometimes when I look at, as a teacher, looking at how little people read, how little people debate, how inadequate our ability to communicate our own ideas and things to each other are. And it's all about selling a dream. And the dream is one day you'll get to be a billionaire like, you know, all these self-made people. And actually, I've come to conclude that even those billionaires, it's all a fraud. It's just about pretend money that is given. And Epstein files revealed that in spades. It was not about this. It was never as much about the sex as it was about how could you scam people into insider trading and gaining, you know, a pretense they can live the life even though they don't need the money. They just need to use other people's. But anyway, that's me.
Thank you. Jonathan.
The fact is, you know, that the ruling class have a, however distant from you think they are from society, is that they're winning. When I say winning the class war, because that will go on for ages, but they are winning it, and they have proved very adept at dealing with opposition, you know, around the world, and that's a major problem. How long they can do that, I don't know, but they have proved very adept at times at keeping people on board. I mean, my brother went to Leaflet today for Stand Up for Racism with a few others. And, you know, they were all over 60. No, they were all over 60. They're all, except one. And there are about five of them, right? You know, and that's pretty, I know it's only one example, but it's an indictment of how weak, you know, these reminders come to me regularly about the weakness of the opposition to capital, you know, and you may say that these people live aloof from society. Well, they can't live that aloof because they've shut people's minds down, and that's pretty effective. Now, I don't know how long will that go on for, but it will go on. And the other thing is, I agree with everything that was said in the meeting. It was a very good meeting. But also at the same time, capital's, the other side of capital's operating, which Marx noted, which was that they're continually making very good technological in inventions, you know, and that still goes on no matter what is destructive nature. I'll leave it there.
I do agree with everything you're saying, but I think that the current war, particularly in Ukraine and Iran, shows that the Achilles heel for the West is that they are so corrupt when it comes to how much profit they extract from their military industrial machine, that they are actually producing third-rate weapons at first-rate prices. And that is actually gaming them out of the war because they are failing. If they hadn't got media lockdown, we would know how badly, you know, Israel is losing, how badly America is losing with its base. You know, to have lost, what is it now, 5, 6 American military bases? I can't think of a single country since World War II that's done that. Can you? You know, they're not just lost, they are blind, they are helpless in the sense that they do not have the weapons. They're having to, you know, the reason why they're having to bring in those tankers, those planes, is because they daren't get close enough to bomb Iran except using tankers to refuel. You know, I've never seen a situation where nobody is talking about the fact that the biggest aircraft carriers in the world are having to hide 1,000 kilometers away from Iran for fear of being hit by drones and missiles. And this from a country which has supposedly lost its navy and its air force. Yeah. You know, we are capable of so much blindness, because this is where the media bit is. You know, we still hanker for meeting every day, you know, people, whereas I can look at what COVID did and say, but it brought us the internet becoming more accessible, people being able to work on Zoom, people being able to work from home. The number of people who are now able, you know, they don't like hot seating in when they go into the office, but they are spending less time commuting than they were. Yeah, because they are, you know, because working practices changed. But the shock was it also showed the corporations that they could lock down with more authoritarianism. And I think the problem is it's a seesaw. We win a bit here, we lose a bit there. But they wouldn't be doing the damage that they're doing to democracy, to the, you know, the mask is off, the pretense is off, and people are not happy. I'm not saying that they're doing good things. The racism and the move to the right is scary when you have been, you know, when you fought for more equality all your life. But the fact that people know they're unhappy, you know, the WEF was, you'll own nothing and be happy. Well, I can't see people being happy, can you? You know, that's why drug addiction is going up. That's why people are eating more for comfort food. That's why we are not living the life that we were told. And people know there is something wrong. You know, they know when they walk around the streets and they're full of rubbish, that the potholes in the road make it, you know, impossible, that they are being taxed more and getting less. And that is, that can't be addressed by a 1% who are cheerfully just saying, oh, I need another naught on my bank account, otherwise I'm not succeeding, you know? But we do not have technology. Look at how bad it is that the software is making, you know, look at the blow up with Windows 11. No? It's designed to make our laptops obsolescent. Lenovo has just got rid of Microsoft, hasn't it? Diana?
I don't know whether Lenovo has it. It might have. Asus has, or is doing so, and it's selling machines with Linux pre-installed, which is what I will be going for because I'll have to replace this. I mean, forcing everybody to stick everything in the cloud, that uses up resources, increases server use, there's serious privacy issues too, because Microsoft is now making you have an account. It's very difficult not to. So then they collect all your personal data and of course, store that on servers and do a lot of processing with that. Again, using up, resources of energy and water. There was a comment I was going to make about, wealth and equality. In general, the wealthier people get, and particularly when you get to billionaire levels, but it could be a bit before that, that actually creates psychopaths. People with that amount of wealth are not psychologically well balanced, and they become psychopaths, and that's how they treat the planet as well. And the thing about the US can't win against Russia, China, Iran, even if they're not ganging up together and fighting against the US. I mean, they do support one another behind the scenes. That's an example of capitalism having seeds of its own destruction, because although because of the way US weapons are produced, or to some extent the Israeli weapons and weapons production in Britain, it is that it's particularly extreme in the US. It's all mega profit driven, so that it's all about making mega profits but not actually producing anything useful. Whereas Russia, China, and Iran are all producing something that actually works. So there might be a bit of hope there. I don't like weapons, whether they work against bad people or not. I just don't like war and weapons. But that might be a shred of hope for us.
Okay, comrades, Ian's had to leave. I'm not sure what happened there.
He's had serious problems with his computer, I'm afraid.
Yeah, it looks like it. He got a new one, but things are still not working right, are they? Does anyone else have any further questions?
Has anyone got anything to say on the health issues that we are facing because of Big Pharma and because of things like, you know, the socialist ideal of free healthcare? We're looking at, again, this inequality of health, but also it seems like the disastrous collaboration between agribusiness and the medical systems that are increasing poor health, but at the same time feeding us junk food and more addictive food. Sorry, Diana, you've got your hand up.
Yeah, no, I was going to ask your point about the food system and the medical system.
Mm.
Because, the agribusiness, monocultures, it's reducing, the quality and diversity of plants that we eat.
Yeah.
As well as that is pushing, GMO, genetically modified organisms. And despite the weird lies that our government and the EU now, I think that the EU is going the same way, manages to promote about, genetic editing not being genetic modification. Well, it blatantly, obviously is. So we've got all that going on, and, the artificial fertilizers and the toxic pesticides, which are not just ecocidal, but they're poisons for us. And as well as that, when medics are trained, they're given very little information about nutrition. So when it comes to somebody being ill, they're not told, oh, you're ill because your diet's crap. You should eat, you know, make sure you've got enough vitamin D, enough vitamin B12, and, you know, not lots of nice, healthy, non-toxic fruit and veg. They're told, they say, oh, take this drug. And yeah, you've got, and because the diet's not being corrected, they're going to stay ill. So yes, they can have that drug forever. And so that'll make big pharma profits until the person stuffs it earlier than they would have needed to. There are, government recommendations and guidelines about diet and nutrition. The government gets their advice from the corporate food companies. So yeah. So what they're doing, although they do come out with some stuff that's sensible, it's dominated by, overshadowed by what the corporations want to push to make money.
Yeah. I would agree with you, but I also think it is interlocked with the industrial things. So things like, oh, we'll save you time and money by coating your clothes with waterproofing. That is really PFAs that are going to get onto your skin. They are going to be washed into the water table with school children clothing. It's the disposableness of it. We've got, you have an entire system which all works together. It's going to reduce our lifespan. It's going to degrade the environment. It is what I've been trying to point towards is while they are using war to make war on indigenous peoples and take their resources and subvert them, and in fact disenfranchise them from the very land that they live on, they are also doing the same to us, while claiming that they want us to be more environmentally aware. So, you know, what is it? Eat the bugs complaint, you know, we mustn't have too much meat. We must eat more fiber, more cereal. They're trying to dictate what we eat while at the same time producing food that is less and less nutritious with this insane, it's like the, well, we can rewild things. It doesn't matter if we cut down forests because we can just put the plants back a little bit later on, as if somehow it's interchangeable, that millions and in fact billions of years of evolution and adaptation to environmental conditions as they are can suddenly be can be interchanged because we've decided we'll plant a few hedgerows between the massive fields that we've got because it's more convenient to have huge machines to collect, you know, to harvest huge oversized monoculture fields. Yeah. So the whole system is designed to actually, I think, depopulate the planet. Anyway, Diana, you got your hand up.
Yeah, when it comes to who's telling us what to eat, the people who are telling us what to eat are the advertisers working on behalf of the corporations that are selling us junk and are pushing supermarkets to stop that junk. If you go round a supermarket looking at the stuff that's sold as food for human consumption, and the stuff that's sold for pet consumption isn't any better. If anything, it might even be worse. But only a minority of that is only a minority of the stuff which is sold as food for humans is actually fit for human consumption. I used to think that 70% of it wasn't fit for human consumption. I would put that up to 80%. And as for, yeah, people should eat less meat, but the meat you should eat is only the organically produced stuff because the intensively farm stuff is not fit for human consumption. It doesn't just trash the environment. It's not good for the people who eat it.
Mm.
So
I'm afraid so.
It doesn't make any sense to accuse, to say it's, you know, people being told what to eat if they're advised to eat less meat. My reason for stopping eating meat was because the quality, the price of it was going up and the quality was going down. Mainly the quality was going down and I wasn't prepared to eat rubbish. So that meant not eating meat as far as I was concerned. So, you know, it is self-interest. It is in the interest of a person's health. If their diet can work that way, to eat less meat. And to know enough about nutrition to know how to get the nutrients they need from a range of sources. So that if they do stop eating meat, how to replace the nutrition that they get from that meat. And we're not given that information. I know about that because I've been researching it for decades, for about 50 years. But most people don't know.
I would say that the issue there is I could believe that it might be accidental as opposed to deliberate if it wasn't for the fact that there are serious determination by the seed sellers, by the people who are actually the government issues to stop people from, you know, they stop indigenous people from keeping and growing their own seeds. They try, you know, the likes of Bill Gates and his agribusiness are encouraging both the use of massive pesticides and specific crops And we have the issue of the government, the establishment, trying to tell us that we're not supposed to use rainwater because it falls from the sky instead of being metered by the water companies. And we're not allowed to grow these self-replenishing foods, particularly things like Jerusalem artichokes, or there are all sorts of ancient grains and ancient crops which are only now being sort of, people are actually now, sometimes on the internet you'll find them and they will share how you can grow your own food. But we're not being encouraged to do that. If there isn't something that the market can make a profit on, they don't want ordinary people to know about it. And I suppose the biggest fight back in fighting ecocide, I suspect, is going to be don't rely on legislation. It's about skill sharing. What can we do to fight back to live sustainably? Because that will not give capitalism its profit. And what can we do to help each other to form an information bank of actual useful knowledge that's not subject to media manipulation and propaganda? Paul?
I was going to say that when you said that the ruling class are trying to depopulate the planet, the rather unfortunate thing about that is that also, to help them out, they won't characterise it this way, but the people that also help them out are the some of the, there's a lot of environmentalists out there that also believe that the size of the global population is the problem. They're wrong, but they have but yeah, it's just unfortunate that a lot of environmentalists tried to do the ruling class a favour by plugging that stupid argument. They're wrong. There's actually an undercurrent of racism there that very few people want to talk about, but that's reality.
Well, it's all being
Comment on that?
It's all being weaponized. Look at how Thatcher sold us privatization as, you know, you can buy shares in your own, in your water company, in your, you know, in your electricity company. All of these companies which we owned because they served the national interest and were cheap are now privatized and the profit is extracted at every level. So we've now got the highest energy bills. And yet we've got plenty of water and wind power that we could be used, even if we don't have as much solar, you know, sunshine as other places. But the truth is, it's going as profit to companies. It is not going to serve us. And this is this, as I said, this seesaw between how we use what we know to fight back against the people who at the moment hold most of the cards. Yeah. You okay, Max?
I think
my camera froze.
That's okay. As long as you're all right.
Does anyone have
my lousy diet?
Does anyone have any further questions?
Well, I'd like to say something now that I'm here.
Oh, Max.
I think a lot of what I keep thinking about, I kind of like almost didn't go to this meeting, but I like it, so I went. But I know these things are important, and I've seen it with my eyes, just living in society. But the reason I feel like it's almost frivolous is because, I mean, politically, like in terms of revolutionary imperative, it's like, yeah, but like I typed in the chat all day, we can't really start to solve this under capitalism. Maybe we can do something here and there. It's like everything else, but it's actually it's more disgusting because of what we're, you know, the nature of the destruction of human beings. But still, that being said, we can't solve it. We can have maybe a reform here or there. But as we all know and are learning very well now, all these reforms mean nothing because they could be taken away, which is happening in the United States and elsewhere, from my experience. So anyway, that's what my feeling is. And it's not like I have no feeling about this. I worked in a chemical plant. I've seen this stuff. I know about the food, but I've also lived among rich people and bourgeois, petty bourgeois people who are liberals, and they are so full of shit. Everything is like, oh, we want to open a new company and have a green. Everything's green. You know, this whole, it's like, it's the same way they deal with racism and all the other things. They deal with like, oh, this is a separate, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like they don't admit that capitalism's the problem. It's like, well, environmentalism is it's the stupid poor people who are smoking cigarettes and eating donuts. You know, that's
yeah
a big part of the problem. Not saying that we shouldn't do anything. We should, but we got to make sure we get it right and don't ally with the class enemy. And also, even that being said, I still think we have to first and foremost figure out how to get some leverage and get some power in one country or another. But also you saw that I would like to say that it's very encouraging to me to see how the Iranians fought back. And that all this talk about, I have a lot of these liberal kind of half socialists, not really friends, who's like, well, yeah, I am against the war, but you know, those Iranians, they're terrible. They're not so great. I'm like, no, you don't have it right. That's not, you know what I mean? You know what I'm saying? So I'd like to applaud them and share that solidarity amongst all of us here because this proves it. It's like people tell me, oh, the Paris Commune, it didn't work. It didn't work. Oh. Yeah, that is the point. The point is it shows you that we can. It gives you that reminder of faith in our class and so forth, which we tend to, I personally tend to lose sometimes, even as a socialist. You got to remind yourself, no. The potential is always there. Until we're all dead and buried in our graves, which is a long way off. You know, anyway, and also this whole thing about overpopulation. Even if they're right, even if they got their way, it would take so long to destroy. There's twice as many people on Earth now as when I was born, maybe more. Like even if they wiped out half the human race, we still have a chance of a socialist revolution, in my opinion. Short of a nuclear, black, whatever they call it, end of the world. So, all right. Sorry, I'm not very good today.
Diana, do you want to come in and answer some of that?
As Mark said, capitalism has the seeds of its own destruction. We can see that. We can see that with the way the US can't produce weapons that beats Iran, good old Iran. We appreciate Iran. We can see that with the way capitalism trashes the environment. We're going to have all sorts of greenwashing policies, but the protection and exploitation just perpetually increases, so it doesn't actually do anything useful. But either capitalism will collapse and it'll take all life on the planet with it, or most life on the planet with it, or there might be a bit of a chance of something surviving. But for something to survive, we have to understand the processes, what's going on, what the alternatives are, and that require and what the processes of destruction are, and that requires education, which is what these discussion meetings are about. That's just a small part of it. So the aim needs to be to give people as a part of the aim is to give people as much information as possible so that they understand what's going on and what alternatives there could be. I was going to say something about food production, and I can't remember. I think I'm losing the plot.
As you said,
I've got to leave now.
Yeah, okay. I have remembered.
Good meeting. I've got to leave.
Thanks for coming, Jonathan. And
thanks very much.
I really hope you enjoyed it.
No, it was excellent. It was excellent.
Thank you.
Sorry. I didn't mean to interrupt.
No. And we appreciate your support.
Yeah. What we need is community sort of food growing groups. If you grow your own nosh, you can do that relatively cheaply, and it's going to be organic and healthy. So if people do that in groups and communities, that can help. It won't solve problems, but it can help.
Yeah. Anyway, Diana, shall we? Paul,
yeah. Can I make something up from that? And then,
yeah.
Okay. Thank you for coming, comrades. It's been a very good discussion, and well, I hope you have another meeting in 2 weeks' time. And those on the mailing list should be getting an email with our next discussion. Okay, thank you for coming, comrades. Diana, you can stop the recording now.
Yep.